All right, glad you're with us, and we hope you write down our toll-free telephone number. We'd love to hear from you today. It's 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. We're going to do a really, really deep dive. I mean, with so much news, we got the Justice Department now seeking to question, CIA officers in their massive review. On top of Stephen Boyd's letter, the Office of the Assistant Attorney General, Nunes, I mean, this speech yesterday, I went through a lot of it. I'm going to play a longer portion of it before we get to Andy McCarthy and his two articles coming up later. You're going to meet a hero that is going to inspire you on levels you can't even begin to understand. So we got a lot happening today. I want to start with, it is so amazing. And I said it last night, knew it immediately. And I even said to the TV audience last night, and I hadn't watched any other TV. I just know the media mob and their sick, twisted mentality. And if they get a single nugget that they can now revitalize, at least in their heads, even though the Mueller report's over, it is done. It is dead. We're learning an awful lot about how wrong they were on so many issues. We're learning about the selectivity of a lot of this, how they tried to turn simple things into the most nefarious things, even editing John Dowd's voicemail tape to make it seem nefarious. And so all of that is emerging. I don't think we're going to hear from Mueller again, especially after he so embarrassed himself last week. And if it wasn't for the Attorney General Barr throwing him a lifeline, I mean, he had totally contradicted in that 9.5-minute speech everything that he had been saying to multiple people on multiple occasions. And after the 9.5 minutes, the media was like manna from heaven, so they thought for a few minutes. See, he wanted to. He really wanted to indict Trump on obstruction, but he couldn't because of the Justice Department policy. Well, a few hours later, the special counsel's office and the attorney general put out a joint statement saying, never mind. A total clarification, because he had so often said the opposite. I mean, I really got the impression that, in fact, that Mueller hadn't even written what he was reading, because he was struggling as he was reading it. And I'm thinking, wow, did Andrew Weissman write this? And whoever wrote it, if it was him, he embarrassed himself because he didn't remember a factual point. And then secondly, the fact that he had to clarify it, just you watch the media, the hysteria, the predictable freak out, the breathless reporting, and then comes the clarification and oops, I screwed up, and they don't even want to cover it. So the president does this interview with Georgie Stephanopoulos over at Good Morning Entertainment America. And it is, you know, there's a part of me, I just don't know. A part of me that thinks it was the perfect setup and it was by design. It would not surprise me if it was, because the president, look, let's be real. He's, you know, he doesn't need the media. He's learned how to bypass them. He has, you know, instant access to what I guess now probably 150 million Americans through Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and social media. And he uses it effectively and even tweeted about the so-called controversy this morning. So the president actually says, let me play what, you know, I'd listen if a foreigner had some op research to what they had to say. If it was bad, I'd ask the FBI, but, you know, I'm not seeking it. It's almost the perfect setup, because if you're going to freak out at this answer, which they did, and I knew they would, and I bet he did too, then it opens them up to their, it is raw hypocrisy on a level that is simultaneously funny and also really sad and pathetic on the other hand. Here's the exchange.
And they didn't even say, they hardly even talked about
him. Should he have gone to the FBI when he got that email?
Okay, let's put yourself in a position. You're a congressman. Somebody comes up and says, hey, I have information on your opponent. Do you call the FBI?
I don't think it's coming from Russia, you do.
I've seen a lot of things over my life. I don't think in my whole life I've ever called the FBI. In my whole life. You don't call the FBI. You throw somebody out of your office. You do whatever
you do. Al Gore got a stolen briefing book. He called the FBI.
Well, that's different. A stolen briefing book. This isn't a stolen. This is somebody that said, we have information on your opponent. Oh, let me call the FBI. Give me a break. Life doesn't work that way.
The FBI director says that's what should happen.
The FBI director is wrong.
Your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI. If I thought there was something wrong. But when somebody comes up with OPPO research, right? They come up with OPPO research. Oh, let's call the FBI. The FBI doesn't have enough agents to take care of it. But you go and talk honestly to congressmen. They all do it. They always have. And that's the way it is. It's called OPPO research.
It's called OPPO research. Now, I'm going to play the media freakout in a second here, which was predictable, which you got to wonder if Trump set him up on purpose. He really got to wonder because he got in all the caveats you'd want. Well, I'd listen. I didn't go to them. If need be, I go to the FBI. Who knows? I mean, maybe it's something terrible I've got to tell them. Nothing wrong with listening to somebody. Now, notice a very different thing that he's describing that has been taken so out of context. And it's like Alka-Seltzer in water and the media and the mob and the Democrats, and they bubble and they fizz and they don't realize what they have just done. And that is when you compare it to Clinton. Let's remind everybody, she bypassed campaign finance laws by funneling money, quote, a law office expense through a law company, Perkins Coie. They hire the op research firm, Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS then hires a foreign national. His name is Christopher Steele. Christopher Steele puts together a series of documents. Combined, they are known as the Steele dossier, the dirty Russian dossier. The New York Times suggesting likely Russian disinformation from the get-go. So then Hillary and her campaign, they're excited and they're spreading this information. They have friends within the intelligence community that are leaking parts of this for the purpose of influencing the 2016 election. They're disseminating it to the Washington Post and the likes of Clinton lover hack David Corn and Michael Isikoff. And so that means the unverified Russian Hillary Clinton bought and paid for lies are being told to the American people before the election. No desire to get to the truth of whether any of it's true. I mean, Andy McCarthy, you know, tells a story. They never even read the dossier. The whole story of Mueller, that he could look into medallions and FARA violations and loan applications and taxes. He has the broadest of all mandates, but the main part of the mandate is Russian interference in the 2016 election, which guys like Devin Nunes warned us all about in 2014, and it all happened on Biden Obama's watch. Hillary recently said, China, hope you're listening. Nobody cared. And none of these people I am going to play in this media mob, none of them ever went after Hillary. She bought it. She paid for it. She used funneled money. It's unverifiable. Steele himself denounced in an interrogatory his own dirty Russian dossier. And it was also used to spy not only on Carter Page and deny him his civil rights and shred the Constitution and the rule of law, but it gave the deep state operatives a passageway into all things Trump campaign, Trump transition, and Trump presidency. And they spied it in a multitude of other ways. None of these people I'm going to play here have ever shown any concern about it. Compared to Donald Trump said, I listen and maybe call the FBI. Listen.
I mean, this is the president saying on tape, the president who's been saying no collusion, no collusion. The Russians were trying to help me. Well, I didn't. That wasn't me. This is that same president saying, yes, I would want to see information from a foreign power.
This is a welcome mat. It is a come hither, not just for the Russians, but for the Chinese, and not just for Donald Trump, but for every Republican running that he wants to make, you know, win in the House or the Senate.
Alexander Hamilton, Federalist Papers, number 68, talks about the danger of foreign influence elevating someone to the executive. Adams and Jefferson wrote about this. This is basic. What Donald Trump just did was the Founding Fathers' worst nightmare.
There you go. Again, I'm waiting for the constitutional conservatives to rise up this morning and say enough.
He's a truth teller about confessing his immorality, his corruption, his thuggishness. And we have to keep both of those things in mind. Yeah, he's the most extraordinary pathological liar ever, but he also just tells the plain truth when it's about his ugly actions and view of the world.
It's a stunning statement from the President of the United States, Wolf, for him to say that the way to react when an adversary like Russia, like China, wants to interfere with the U.S. election by offering research, opposition research, to try to help one campaign, to try to hurt another, to try to influence an election.
This was also an open invitation for foreign countries to now interfere in the U.S. election. This is at a moment in which we are, you know, our intelligence apparatus says the lights are blinking red for the 2020 election. And this is basically the President of the United States saying, come on in, we're happy to accept.
Basically a clarion call saying, you know what, if a country came to me again, I'd listen to it.
Yeah, the Russians are going to, they're going to do this. They're going to repeat what they did in 2016. They're going to repeat it in 2020. And now what President Trump has done is encouraging them to do so. Again, it's just, it's stunning.
Yeah, and I mean, again, people just kind of roll their eyes at this point. It bears repeating, this is not normal behavior of a president. I'm not even sure I don't even know if he understands or just doesn't care what the ramifications of this are. But if any other president had said anything resembling this, you know, Republicans in Congress would have understandably, called him a traitor.
It is the single, you can't expose the double standard more than this. You just can't. Donald Trump, he was not, he was not soliciting. He didn't pay. He didn't set up. He didn't hire. He didn't disseminate unverified information. He said, somebody comes to me, I'll listen. And if it's bad, I'm going to bring it to the FBI. That's all he said. And compared to the actions, which, by the way, we're now getting to the bottom of. I mean, hearing Clapper's voice in that is really interesting in light of the Justice Department now is going to interview top senior CIA officers in their review of what happened in 2016. This is now literally the walls are closing in on the deep state. And I'll tell you this, it's inevitable now. It's going to happen. There's nothing that's going to stop it. And it will be exposed. And this is just the media's latest example. They've learned nothing. Not a thing. And they continue to humiliate and embarrass themselves daily. It's like, if Trump did it on purpose, I got to tell you something, it was the perfect setup. Because he knew they'd dive in head first, and they did, not knowing, realizing their own stupidity, ignorance, and hypocrisy. It's amazing. You know, it is interesting, though. There are some Democrats that are now beginning to fear they got set up. And, you know, a friend of mine sent this from the Democratic underground because I think Democrats are actually beginning to suspect, we were set up the whole time. Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader, blasting Democrats for their hypocrisy. There was a post on the Democratic Underground somebody sent me that after listening to McCarthy, I kind of believe Trump's statement last night was orchestrated as the GOP moves toward giving Trump what he wants. Jailing political opponents, that's not what he wants. He just wants justice, equal justice under the law, equal application under the laws. This diabolical plot is being put into motion. They kind of figured it out, but they still fell right into the trap. I mean, it's absolute genius jujitsu, political jujitsu. All right, 25 now until the top of the hour, 800-941-SHAWN. You want to be a part of the program. I mean, it is pretty amazing. And I started Hannity last night, and I said, this time tomorrow night, and I've not watched any TV. I just know the mob mentality, and there's never going to be a moment where they're going to say, yeah, we've been wrong. It just isn't going to happen. You know, Roswell Rachel, the conspiracy theorist, now moderator, I mean, just dives right in, as they so often have. And it's not just, it's every pretty much mainstream media outlet. And for them to ignore the outright hypocrisy and stupidity is pretty amazing. Now, do I know for sure that Trump probably set him up? I don't. Do I think he knows the media and understands their mindset that they just, you know, foaming at the mouth to attack him and try to reignite, in spite of four separate investigations, this Russia collusion narrative that's dead? Of course he knows. He's watched it. He's observed it. He's seen it. He's lived it. And, you know, it's been a pain in the neck. I mean, he probably spent, 40% of his time the last couple of years just dealing with that. It was interesting. As I predicted, Democrats walked into this trap, which is what my first instinct was last night. I mean, as if Georgie, you know, Stephanopoulos released, they thought they've got him. Lindsey Graham was one of the first to point out this morning that if Trump's answer to the hypothetical question was in any way wrong, then Democrats have a lot of explaining to do because they actually did far worse than what they're all getting outraged about of Trump merely considering and saying the words, I would listen and if need be, go to the FBI. That's all he said. And by the way, will somebody at Mediaite correct the column that says Hannity incorrectly said that the president mentioned he might take it to the FBI because he said it. I mean, we just played it. And so Graham goes on and he says, well, I hope my Democratic colleagues are going to be equally offended by the fact that this actually did happen in 2016 when a foreign agent was paid for by a political party to gather op research. All these things are wrong, he said, referring to Christopher Steele. I mean, even Steele doesn't stand behind his own stupid dossier. And all these things, beyond that, you know, it was used as a weapon. It is an unverifiable document put together by Steele. Push comes to shove. And this is going to be the amazing thing now that Durham is going to go and interview Christopher Steele, because Christopher Steele's kind of stuck in a narrative because he was in this legal case in Great Britain and he was under oath and he did face the threat of perjury. And if he contradicts to Durham or any of the Attorney General Barr's team, what he said under oath, that could bounce back and rebound and result in a perjury charge against him and right in Great Britain. What would be the better thing to do, I think, is to bring him to the United States and have him extradited. We'll see, considering everybody wants to get Julian Assange. I still want to see all the evidence that they've got where all this came from on all of these issues. You know, how many times have I said we don't rush to judgment? But the only thing we can do is look at facts, and the facts are laid out by James Comey. Like, for example, with Hillary. Yeah, she did have a server in a mom-and-pop bathroom closet. Yeah, there was top-secret classified information marked as such on that server. Yes, 18 U.S.C. 793 clearly states that that is a felony, each offense. And then we have, again, like I keep saying, Democrats have selective moral outrage. They don't care about underlying crimes, or in this particular case, they don't care about foreign influence. If it's Hillary literally setting it all up, using campaign money funneled through a law firm as a law expense to hire an op research firm, to hire a foreign national who puts together a series of Russian lies that even he says under oath, I have no idea are true. And then it becomes disseminated to the American people, Russian lies. New York Times suspects always Russian disinformation from the beginning. And in an effort to influence American citizens before the vote, rig the election, if you will, and then also used as a means of spying on the Trump campaign, one of many, and then later the Trump transition, and then later the Trump presidency, on top of what happened to Carter Page, who it turns out was a intelligence asset for years, and they knew very well, and there's tapes of Carter Page being hated by people in Russia. Not that that's ever going to make the Mueller report. And then you add to that, oh, yeah, then they went after Papadopoulos. They even dragged a blonde, bombshell, flirtatious, you know, young model into the situation to flirt with him as a means of extracting information. And when he says, I'd never do that, I don't know anything about Russia. I have no idea if anybody did it, but I wouldn't, because it'd be treason, which would be exculpatory. And then Sam Clovis, and then a certain amount of panic sets in. And as we get closer to the election, and in spite of the warnings of Bruce Orr in August of 2016, in spite of the warnings by Kathleen Kavlik over at the State Department about, you know, 2 weeks, 10 days prior to the first FISA application being used against Page to backdoor and spy on Trump, says, uh-oh, this guy's all political. He's got a deadline. The deadline is Election Day, and he's desperate. And still, I'd like to have questions answered now that the president's declassified. At one point, we're going to get the 302s. I want to know about the conversations with Steele and Bruce Orr, especially as Christopher Steele long fired for lying and leaking. Because remember, the FBI was paying him in part for the dossier, as was Hillary Clinton's campaign, as was, according to Donna Brazil, the money that she controlled at the DNC, which she couldn't believe when she took over for Debbie Wasserman Schultz, had to tell Bernie Sanders, yeah, it's all true. They rigged the primary. Sorry. Oops. Never want to make that call. And this is what they get upset about. Trump says, well, I'd listen to them. And yeah, if need be, I'd call the FBI. But, you know, I'd have to hear what they said. What if what they were offering was a plot against the United States? What if there really was? Let's imagine for a second. Let's use the liberal imagination. What if there was compromising materials on Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton? Now, Bill Clinton did, remember, go over to Russia, get twice his normal speaking fee. The bank that paid him was involved in the Uranium One deal. He had attempted to meet with nuclear regulators in Russia, but instead actually got to meet with Putin himself.
Slick Willie.
His wife, then Secretary of State, signs off on, with others, this deal about Uranium One, and that goes to a foreign company, but we don't have enough uranium. We actually have to import it, the foundational materials for nuclear weapons. And then we find out we actually had a spy that penetrated Putin's network in America because they wanted a foothold in the uranium industry in the United States. And he describes, his name is William Campbell, I've interviewed him, He describes bribery, extortion, kickbacks, and money laundering. And then after the approval of the Uranium One deal happens, $145 million just so happens to end up in the Clinton Foundation by the very people involved in the deal. Sounds like a Russian connection to me. Again, the media doesn't care. They don't care because they've got an agenda. They don't care because their journalism's dead. They don't care because they're nothing but a mere extension of all things liberal, extreme, radical, socialist, Democrat, and that party. They don't care because they literally suffer from a real condition, which is Trump psychosis, and every second, minute, hour of every day, they're just addicted to hating this president. And that's why if they get a nugget where they thought they could bring back to life their 2 years of lying and their hoax and their conspiracy theory, because he said, I'd listen, but if need be, I'd call the FBI and ignore all of what Hillary Clinton did, paying a foreign national for Russian lies that were then used as the bulk of information to spy on the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, and then Trump presidency. And they not care about it at all, or see how stupid they are and how ignorant they are and how they just are so wrapped up in this psychotic rage of theirs that they missed the big trap they fell into. Now, I don't know what the president did or didn't, whether he thought of it or not. I personally think he probably did. Just a guess, no firsthand knowledge for the media that always assumes that I know the president's thinking on all things, which I kind of get a kick out of. And we can't forget, you know, we do have one guy on tape. It's actually, you can hear him colluding and trying to get dirt on Donald Trump. All Donald Trump said is, they come to me, I'll listen to them. If it's bad, I'll go to the FBI. But we got a tape of the cowardly Schiff. He thinks he's talking to a Russian that has dirt on Donald Trump.
Okay, and so Buzova met with Trump in New York at some point after the 2013 Miss Universe pageant.
Absolutely, and she got compromising materials on Trump after their short relations.
Okay, and what's the nature of the compromise?
Compromising materials. Go ahead.
Okay, and so Buzova met with Trump in New York at some point after the 2013 Miss Universe pageant.
Absolutely, and she got compromising materials on Trump after their short relations.
Okay, and what's the nature of the compromise?
Well, there were pictures of naked Trump.
Okay, and so Putin was made aware of the availability of the compromising material?
Yes, of course. Buzova shared those materials with Sobchak, and Sobchak shares those materials with Putin because she's a goddaughter of Putin, and Putin decided to press on Trump.
And the materials that you can provide to the committee or to the FBI, would they corroborate this allegation?
Sure, of course. When they were in Ukraine, we got their conversation by the phone where they discussed those compromising materials. We are ready to provide it to FBI.
So you have recordings of both Sovchek and Buzova where they're discussing the compromising material on Mr. Trump?
Absolutely.
It is the I don't know what's the better take, that or Alec Baldwin trying to be a radio talk show host. I just don't know which one's better. Compromising materials. What's the nature? Pictures of the naked Trump. Naked Trump. Does Putin know? Of course, the material, compromising materials they shared with Vladimir. It's the greatest thing ever. It really is. They pay for this op research. They accept all of it, even though it's not true. They paid for it. They literally hired people to dig it up. They funneled the money. It's full of lies. It's unverifiable. And then they use it to spy on the campaign, the transition team, and then the president of the United States to undo a presidential election. They don't care about any of that. Only one caught on tape that is looking for compromising materials is Adam Schiff by a guy he thinks is in Russia that turns out to be a hoaxer. Hillary Paysteel, who in turn pays Russian sources to fabricate lies on Trump that even Schiff didn't even read, which we'll find out from Andy McCarthy, who's going to join us in the next hour, wrote some incredible columns. And those, you know, these frauds have been completely silent. And the obvious thing is, okay, Trump said he'd listen. And if need be, go to the FBI. People would come to him. He didn't seek it out. He wouldn't seek it out. And then watch the media bend over backwards. First, feigning moral outrage. Let's, you know, I believe, but only if we can bludgeon Kavanaugh in our belief. Not the lieutenant governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia. Oh, by the way, Shifty Schiff has subpoenaed Michael Flynn. And Michael Flynn, and even the president said, praised Flynn's decision to hire the great Sidney Powell, who's amazing. 16 months ago, she said he should withdraw that plea. Now we've got the Justice Department, by the way. They're going to interview CIA officers. It's all getting interesting. Whether you like it or not, remember Barr what he said. Mueller is done. Decision over. But Act Two, the rigged investigation, the premeditated FISA fraud that was perpetrated a multitude of times, and the effort by the deep state to undo the presidency of a duly elected president of the United States. Oh, that's front and center. And it's going full force with now total declassification in the hands of the attorney general. And a commitment that we'll get to the bottom of it. And I don't think there's any stopping the train. All right, before we get to Andy McCarthy, I want to play this Nunes speech from yesterday, long portions of it anyway, because it's really powerful. If you're really paying attention to this, and I don't think it's getting the attention, frankly, it deserves on the media. So I just want you to hear this right from Devin Nunes himself, who really did an incredible job.
Here we are more than 2 years since Democrats from this committee publicly claimed to have more than circumstantial evidence that the Trump campaign colluded with Russians to hack the 2016 election. And more than 2 years since they read false allegations from the Steele dossier into the congressional record at an open hearing of this committee. After that, the American people were subjected to endless hysteria by the media, Democrats, and anonymous intelligence leakers. Seemingly every day, the media triumphantly published a supposed bombshell story, often based on classified documents the reporters had not actually seen, which purportedly proved that President Trump or some Trump associate was a treacherous Russian agent. Democrats on this committee regularly joined the news pundits in denouncing the traitors. Eventually, the Democrats became convinced that the Mueller report would finally rid them of their sinister president who had the audacity to defeat Hillary Clinton. The entire scheme has now imploded, and the collusion accusation has become exposed as a hoax. One would think the Democrats would simply apologize and get back to lawmaking and oversight, but it's clear they couldn't stop this grotesque spectacle even if they wanted to. After years of false accusations and McCarthyite smears, the collusion hoax now defines the Democratic Party. The hoax is what they have in place of a governing philosophy or a constructive vision for our country. The Democrats assembled us today to analyze the shoddy political hit piece known as the Mueller Report. It's written in the same spirit and with the same purpose as the Steele dossier, which was once championed by Democrats on this committee, but which they rarely mentioned after it was exposed as yet another Democrat-created hoax. Unfortunately for the Democrats, the Mueller dossier, as I call it, either debunked many of their favorite conspiracy theories or did not even find them worth discussing. These include Mueller's finding that Michael Cohen did not travel to Prague to conspire with the Russians. No evidence that Carter Page conspired with Russians. No mention of Paul Manafort visiting Julian Assange in London. No mention of secret communications between a Trump Tower computer server and Russia's Alpha Bank. and no mention of former NRA lawyer Cleta Mitchell or her supposed knowledge of a scheme to launder Russian money through the NRA for the Trump campaign. Insinuations that Mitchell originated, these insinuations against Mitchell originated with Fusion GPS chief Glenn Simpson and were first made public in a document published by Democrats on this committee. The real purpose of the Mueller dossier, however, was to help Democrats impeach the president in absence of any evidence of collusion. Thus, the report includes a long litany of ordinary contacts between Trump associates and Russians, as if a certain number of contacts indicate a conspiracy, even if no conversations actually created or even discussed a conspiracy. Excerpts from a voicemail from Trump attorney John Dowd that the Mueller team selectively edited to make it seem threatening and nefarious. No comment on the close relationship between Democrat operatives at Fusion GPS and multiple Russians who participated in the June 9th, 2016 meeting at Trump Tower. In fact, no mention or comment on Fusion GPS at all. No useful information on figures who played key roles in the investigation, such as Joseph Mifsud, a Malta diplomat, or the Australian diplomat Alexander Downer, or the Democrat-paid operative, former spy Christopher Steele. No useful information about the many irregularities that marred the FBI's Russia investigation.
All right, hour two, Sean Hannity's show. Glad you're with us. 800-941-SEAN if you want to be a part of the program. Now, that was from the House hearings, and yes, Devin Nunes, Mueller dossier debunked many Democrats and their conspiracy theories, and of course, except for the crazy Democrats. Andy McCarthy has really did an incredible job with two columns that he's written recently, one about the Steele dossier, and number two, the lessons of the Mueller probe, and he joins us now for details on all of this. And, you know, you surmised eight critical points for the committee, and I'll let you go through them, but I think it's important that we do it step by step because there's a lot to learn here, especially now with everything Barr, Durham, what we expect from the Inspector General and others. About where we're headed in all of this. The New York Times story yesterday about the CIA going in. Now they're going to be questioned. What have we learned to this point?
Sean, I think there's a big difference between what we've learned and what you observe when you're in one of these committee rooms, as I was in yesterday. There's this sort of like this life that the Mueller report and the broader Russiagate probe have in real life, where you can actually sit down and read what the report says. And I say that thinking that there's a number of problems with the report as well, but at least, you know, you can sit down and read it and you understand in a linear way where they're trying to go with their evidence.
I look forward to engaging with the committee. I'd make a few general points to start about volume one of the report. It draws three principal conclusions. First, the Putin regime perceived advantage in a Trump victory and conducted its operations accordingly. Second, there is evidence that the Trump campaign hoped to benefit from the publication of negative information about the opponent. And third, there is no evidence of a conspiracy between the Trump campaign and the Russian regime. The first of these two findings are more in the nature of political assertions than prosecutorial findings. If there is insufficient evidence that a conspiratorial enterprise existed, a prosecutor has no business speculating on the motives in a politically provocative manner. Moreover, I do not believe the assertion is borne out by the evidence. The report shows that agents of Putin's regime expressed support for Trump's candidacy. That is entirely consistent with a motivation to incite divisions and dissent in the body politic of free Western nations, which is Russia's MO throughout the world. Russia's goal is to destabilize Western governments, which advantages the Kremlin by making it more difficult for those governments to pursue their interests in the world. Putin tends to back the candidates he believes will lose on the theory that an alienated losing faction will make it harder for the winning faction to govern. Putin is all about Russia's interests, which is destabilization. It is a mistake, I respectfully submit to the committee, to allow him to divide us by portraying him as on one side or the other side. He's against all of us.
When you're in one of these hearing rooms, however, it's a very different version of the Mueller report than what you have written in the Mueller report. At least that was my experience yesterday with this committee. So what ends up happening is in the four corners of this committee room, the collusion conspiracy, even the allegation that, Trump was in cahoots with the Kremlin, is alive and well, and they are pursuing it as if it's a live issue. And I detected, I tried to call them on us a couple of times during the hearing, but the way that they do this is they take vast liberties with some of the evidence that Mueller found. And then, well, let me give you a concrete example. You know, this guy, Konstantin Kalimnik, for example, who we've now learned in recent days was actually a informant for the State Department. And there's been some reporting about that that goes back a good bit of time, but now we have more solid reporting on it, I think, from John Solomon, if I'm remembering right. So, you know, his connection to Russian intelligence goes back 20 years at a time when everybody we dealt with in Russia had some kind of connection or another to the Russian government or the Russian intelligence services. That's what happened after the Soviet Union fell. For 10 or 11 years, this guy worked for the Senator John McCain-controlled International Republican Institute, where everybody knew that he had ties to the Russian military intelligence service. The State Department took him in as a source of information with everybody knowing that. But yet, because he gets hired by Manafort, and years later, Manafort gets hired in connection with the Trump campaign, suddenly this guy, Kalimnik, is a live Russian agent. So while I was sitting there yesterday, the Democrats were asking my co-colleagues on the panel, and the panelists were responding as cued, you know, about how Kalimnik is this dark Russian Kremlin operative, and he's tasking Manafort to do various things for the Russian regime in connection with the Trump campaign. And I finally, after my head started to explode after a while, I said, you know, don't you guys think that you ought to, you're missing a step here? Like, don't we need to prove that Kalimnik's a Russian agent before we go off on this extravagant tangent? And don't you think that if there was real evidence that Kalimnik actually was a Russian agent, that the Mueller report would have come out much differently than it did?
I am listening to you, Andy, and I've been listening to Dershowitz and Devin Nunes, who we played at the beginning of this segment, and I went through it in a lot of detail yesterday on the program, and I'm going to go through some of the findings as we really need to take this down and really take it apart. The answer is yes. The obvious question, too, is if you have time for taxi medallions and FARA violations and loan applications and back taxes. I'm not saying that those issues are not important, and I think everybody should pay their taxes, and you can't lie on a loan application. It's stupid. It's also against the law. We know FARA violations were prosecuted few and far between, but how do you miss the dossier? If you're really, with the broad mandate that Mueller had, if he could spread out to FARA and taxi medallions, how does he not even touch the dossier?
Sean, you know, the dossier is just amazing because in that hearing room, the dossier does not exist. Chairman Schiff, who was, I must say, he was very gracious to me, and I appreciated it during the hearing. It was a very civil exchange. But I was asked any number of times, what conclusion in Mueller's report relies on the Steele dossier? And, of course, Mueller doesn't rely on the Steele dossier. So I'm like, okay, guys, you're right. There's nothing about the Steele dossier in there. Number one, that's kind of a problem, isn't it? Because that was what got all this rolling. And number two, you'll also notice what's not in the Mueller report is any allegation that there was a Trump-Russia conspiracy, which is why he didn't rely on the Steele dossier. But in that hearing, Sean, we went on for 3 hours. It was like the Steele dossier didn't exist, and my co-panelists who were called by the committee majority, and they're very fine former FBI officials in counterintelligence. I'm not trying to cast aspersions at them, but they were asked, everybody on the panel was asked, have you read the Steele dossier? And they both said no. Like, why would you need to read the Steele dossier to know anything?
How could you not read it? I mean, and when you do read it, you realize how absurd and on its surface it is. All right, stay right there. Andy McCarthy is with us, National Review. Two great columns by his as we really now begin to dig down deep and the new developments we have with the Justice Department seeking to question CIA officers, which is part of it. And, of course, the DOJ letter to Nadler, which we've been discussing for days. We'll get to all of this and more. Anyway, all right, as we continue, short segment, Andy McCarthy, though, is going to stay with us into the next half hour, 800-941-SEAN. It's kind of a surreal experience because you're sitting there and you're saying the cowardly Schiff is who I call him, that he's being nice to you. Then this whole issue of the dossier comes up and you're like, that's a problem. Everyone else, your colleagues think it's a problem. It's so obvious to me. Why? What's their response to that?
They don't have a response, Sean. What they figure is, in that room, they are the majority, so they're calling the tune, and they can make the narrative whatever they want to make it. And we're there basically to poke holes in what they're trying to construct during the limited period of time that they give you to do that. But they are scripting. This is what I've thought this was from the beginning. They are scripting a political narrative, and they have not given up. I mean, everybody in America may think after Mueller's ballyhooed report is in and there's no finding of conspiracy between the president and his campaign and Russia, you know, most of the country has moved on. I am here to tell you, they have not moved on. In that room, collusion is alive and well.
All right, we'll take a break. Andy McCarthy has agreed to stay on longer into the next half hour. Two great columns. We'll post them on Hannity.com, the lessons of the Mueller probe, and the second one, Steele's shoddy dossier. Really a must read if you want to really dig down deep and understand this. We'll take a quick break and the new news of the day and much more straight ahead. All right, 25 till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. We'll get to the new news of the Justice Department now. We'll question CIA officers in their Russia inquiry review. We continue. Andy McCarthy, two great columns up on Hannity.com, the lessons of the Mueller probe and Steele's shoddy dossier. Let's just stay on the dossier for one second here. They didn't read it, and I'm thinking, that is a staggering statement to me, considering it was the bulk of information that was used to get the FISA applications four times and not only spy on Carter Page and take away his civil liberties, who we now know was an American asset for our intelligence community for years, as he has told me many times now. But more importantly, it became the backdoor into everything the Trump campaign, the Trump transition, and then, of course, the Trump presidency. And you're saying they didn't read it?
Correct. The experts that they brought in to discuss the collusion aspect of the Mueller investigation, which, as you're saying, Sean, is the rationale for the investigation in the first place, they hadn't read it. And they were actually, they seemed, I think, sincerely surprised that anybody thought that that was surprising or that would be anything out of the ordinary. And I do think that this is because in the narrative, as it's now being reconstructed by the Democrats, the way they have decided to deal with the utter implosion of the Steele dossier is to just pretend it never happened.
Well, unfortunately for them, there's been too many of us that actually have read it. And more importantly, now that we know the extent of it, I mean, it's kind of funny from my perspective because I've been so immersed in this for over 2 years. And we really have tried to do the work of everyone else in the media, because the 99% has an agenda and they've just been all in breathless hysteria, anonymous sourcing to destroy the president, believing and even advancing a hoax, a conspiracy theory, and an outright lying to the American people. And yet this is now coming to fruition in a way I don't think any of us ever really imagined. And that then brings us to where we are, and that was the statements that the Attorney General Barr made to Lindsey Graham about what's important and how the Mueller report is dead, it's finished, he's not going back to it, but he is interested in a rigged investigation, he is interested in FISA abuse, he is interested in the origins of this intelligence review, as he calls it. And then the New York Times even went as far as to say they're going to now question CIA officers in this Russia inquiry review. But it runs a lot deeper than that, with now the addition of Mr. Durham, who seems to be, by all accounts, as serious as the attorney general is serious, as the inspector general, I believe, is serious about getting to the truth.
Yeah, Sean, I think the other good thing about Durham, and I agree with all of that, I think that Durham and Barr have definitely rolled up their sleeves and they're doing what the attorney general said he was going to do, which is get down to the bottom of the genesis of this thing, which, by the way, Sean, you mentioned before the points I try to make to the committee. One of the main ones I try to make to them is that these powers, these counterintelligence awesome powers that we have, are necessary to protect the country. And if we don't prove to Americans that we can hold people accountable when they get abused, then these powers, public pressure is going to be to repeal or cut back on these powers, which makes the country less safe. So while they try to turn this into a big political narrative, there's a lot on the table in terms of what our security is. And I think that is what Barr, who understands how important this all is focused on. We need to know exactly what happened here and why. And everybody is understandably focused on the FBI's crossfire hurricane counterintelligence investigation that they formally opened on the end of July of 2016. But it looks like this goes back, I mean, I've been looking at this for a couple of years now. This goes back into the second half of 2015, at the very least, from the CIA side in terms of the streams of intelligence that were coming in to Brennan at the CIA. And the Russian hacking part of it, as even came out at this cockamamie hearing yesterday, that part of it goes back to 2014. So, you know, there's a lot here, and it's very important, I think, for us to understand what got this rolling so that we can have we can really grasp what happened here. And if there's measures that need to be taken to make sure it doesn't happen again, we have to get those implemented.
So let me go to the DOJ letter to Jerry Nadler, the chairman, and it was signed by Stephen Boyd, the assistant attorney general. And this is about records preservation and the cooperation of the CIA, which Gina Haspel, I understand, has said she will fully cooperate with in all aspects of, and the Justice Department officials intending now to interview senior CIA officers. There's I've been looking at this for a long time. We've been watching this intelligence shakeup among the Italians, and many believe it to be connected to all of this, and as much as, is there a possibility in all of this that to circumvent American laws which protect constitutional and civil liberties, that laws, that certain activities, let's say, were outsourced, intelligence gathering outsourced to allied countries, Great Britain, Italy, Australia, those are the names I keep hearing over and over again from my sources, as a means of circumventing U.S. law, but really no different than them just breaking the law themselves, right? There's no distinction.
Yeah, well, let's stay with what we know for sure, Sean, and that is that there was monitoring activity involving people connected to the Trump campaign that took place in Britain. It took place in Italy. There was an Australian diplomat who was involved in it. We've heard of intelligence stream coming in from Estonia in the Balkans to Brennan. when the United States operates in a foreign country, especially a friendly foreign country, we don't operate in stealth there. That happens in coordination with the host government. And, you know, I'm thinking just in particular, to take one example, in early July of 2016, when the FBI has its first contact in this case that we know of with Steele, that contact is handled by a guy who is basically the FBI's legal attaché in Rome, a guy by the name of Mike Gaeta. In order for him to have that visit with Steele, who was in London, he had to get permission from his headquarters and from the State Department. And the reason that they have to run up that flagpole is the State Department's got to make sure it's okay with the Brits. So, you know, there's a lot that's involved here in the way of coordination. And we don't just haul off and do operations in other countries. We do it in coordination with the host government. So that has to be looked at.
Is it something that if we find out happened, is there a distinction in your mind legally? I mean, you worked at the prestigious, you know, Southern District of New York with a lot of other great attorneys. I mean, that is considered really the single best district attorney's office, if you will, in the entire country. Some of the greatest lawyers that we know of, big name lawyers, have come out of there and taken on big jobs. Would that be viewed in the same light as just doing it yourself if you outsource something?
Well, yes and no. I mean, the FBI is our domestic intelligence service, as opposed to the CIA, which is only supposed to operate outside.
Slow down here. James Comey says we don't spy, and this is after he signed the first FISA application. Those are his words.
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, as Attorney General Barr said, to argue over what you call it is kind of silly. I mean, it's spying. It's covert surveillance. It's the covert collection of intelligence. What's important, as Barr says, is what predicated it, not what name you give to it. In a way, I kind of understand why some of these, you know, Justice Department and FBI people don't want to use the word spying, because they enforce the espionage laws and they don't want to be understood as implicitly saying that what they're doing is illegal. But that gets us into a whole argument over a label, when what we really need to focus on here is what did they do and did they have a good reason for it? And, you know, in this instance, if the FBI is running things, Sean, the reason there are domestic security service and that the CIA isn't, the CIA operates outside the U.S., is that we want our domestic intelligence service to be beholden to the laws and the Constitution of the United States at all times. So they are not supposed to farm out to other people things that they could not do themselves. And to just put it like in a domestic context so people can understand it, let's say we were in a situation where I needed probable cause to go in and search your home, and I didn't have it. What if I grabbed somebody who I knew, who I could use as an informant, and I got him to go in and do the search that I couldn't do because I can't go to court and get a warrant? If he's my agent, he's supposed to comply with the law the same way I am. And that's the way it works here, and that's basically the way the FBI is supposed to work overseas. If there's something that they can't do, they're not supposed to task that to another government or another intelligence agency who might be operating outside U.S. law and be able to do something to an American citizen that the Bureau couldn't do directly. And I don't understand for the life of me why we don't know what they told the FISA court was the reason why they needed to get a warrant, especially when we now know they not only had the availability to interview him, they actually had an informant into him. They had this guy, Stefan Halper, who mm-hmm. was talking to him and reporting back. So I just don't get that at all.
Quick break. More with Andy McCarthy on the other side. Two great columns. Must read. Steele shoddy dossier, the lessons of the Mueller probe. It's on Hannity.com. Of course, he is also a writer for National Review Online. All right, as we wrap things up, a really compelling hour with Andy McCarthy, Steel Shoddy Dossier and the Lessons of the Mueller Probe, two incredible articles that he wrote for National Review. We put them up and linked them on Hannity.com. Then when the last question on Nunes, and because it dovetails again, how does Mueller excerpt a voicemail and selectively edit a voicemail with John Dowd to make it seem threatening and nefarious? How do they take ordinary contacts with Trump associates and try to make them nefarious when there's nothing at all about it? How do they, we got into how they, how could they possibly ignore the dossier considering the mandate was as broad as it was? And it just, to me, you know, what does that say about Mueller? And again, I've been critical of the team that he appointed from day one, even Hillary Clinton's attorney at the foundation. And you know how I feel about Andrew Weissman.
Yeah, Sean, I'm very disturbed reading Mueller's report. That episode that you talk about in connection with John Dowd, where they selectively edited that message in order to make it seem more nefarious, you know, if that was a one-off, you might be able to just say, all right, well, it's a 448-page report, and they got carried away in this one instance. But I have to tell you, I see that kind of stuff throughout the report. You know, we just talked about Carter Page a few minutes ago. There's nothing in the report that talks about how Page cooperated with the FBI and the Justice Department in the prosecution of Russian spies. I mean, to normal people, common sense people, if you want to tell somebody that Carter Page is a Russian operative and you tell them the whole story, and the whole story includes that he cooperated with the Justice Department in the prosecution of Russian spies, and that the Russian spies are recorded calling him an idiot, who on earth would believe that Carter Page was a Russian operative? So what do you do with that evidence if you're trying to pitch things that way? You leave it out. And I must say, I see throughout this report places where they have either spun things in a certain way, which I think is much more extravagant than the facts call for, or just flat left stuff out that was necessary to understand what happened here.
I got to let it end there. Are you confident, yes or no question, that these people will be held responsible, FISA abuse, rigging an investigation, et cetera?
I'm confident that Attorney General Barr is going to find out what happened here.
Okay. Great stuff. Thank you so much, Andy McCarthy. Steel Shoddy Dossier and the Lessons of the Mueller Probe. We linked them all to Hannity.com. A really informative hour. Thank you, sir. When we come back, News Roundup, Information Overload Hour, and much, much more as we continue. Glad you're with us, Sean Hannity Show.
And they didn't even say, they hardly even talked about it.
Should he have gone to the FBI when he got that email?
Okay, let's put yourself in a position. You're a congressman. Somebody comes up and says, hey, I have information on your opponent. Do you call the FBI? I've seen a lot of things over my life. I don't think in my whole life I've ever called the FBI. In my whole life. You don't call the FBI. You throw somebody out of your office. You do whatever
you do. Al Gore got a stolen briefing book. He called the FBI.
Well, that's different. A stolen briefing book. This isn't a stolen. This is somebody that said, we have information on your opponent. Oh, let me call the FBI. Give me a break. Life doesn't work that way.
The FBI director says that's what should happen.
The FBI director is wrong.
Your campaign this time around, if foreigners, if Russia, if China, if someone else offers you information on an opponent, should they accept it or should they call the FBI?
I think maybe you do both. I think you might want to listen. There's nothing wrong with listening. If somebody called from a country, Norway, we have information on your opponent. Oh, I think I'd want to hear it.
You want that kind of interference in our elections?
It's not an interference. They have information. I think I'd take it. If I thought there was something wrong, I'd go maybe to the FBI if I thought there was something wrong. But when somebody comes up with OPPO research, right? They come up with OPPO research. Oh, let's call the FBI. The FBI doesn't have enough agents to take care of it. But you go and talk honestly to congressmen. They all do it. They always have. And that's the way it is. It's called OPPO research.
I mean, this is the president saying on tape, the president who's been saying no collusion, no collusion. The Russians were trying to help me. Well, I didn't. That wasn't me. This is that same president saying, yes, I would want to see information from a foreign power.
This is a welcome mat. It is a come hither, not just for the Russians, but for the Chinese, and not just for Donald Trump, but for every Republican running that he wants to make, you know, win in the House or the Senate.
Alexander Hamilton, Federalist Papers, number 68, talks about the danger of foreign influence elevating someone to the executive. Adams and Jefferson wrote about this. This is basic. What Donald Trump just did was the Founding Fathers' worst nightmare.
There you go. Again, I'm waiting for the constitutional conservatives to rise up this morning and say enough.
He's a truth teller about confessing his immorality, his corruption, his thuggishness. And we have to keep both of those things in mind. Yeah, he's the most extraordinary pathological liar ever, but he also just tells the plain truth when it's about his ugly actions and view of the world.
Again, it's just it's stunning.
Yeah, and I mean, again, people just kind of roll their eyes at this point. It bears repeating. This is not normal behavior of a president. I'm not even sure I don't even know if he understands or doesn't care what the ramifications of this are. But if any other president had said anything resembling this, you know, Republicans in Congress would have understandably, called him a traitor.
Can you imagine?
I said it last night, and I couldn't be more right. It was a genius setup of the media by the president. Anyway, glad you're with us. News Roundup and Information Overload Hour, Sean Hannity Show. So the president said, if you actually look at the transcript, he said, well, I'd listen, and maybe I would tell the FBI, depending on what they're saying. Here's the beauty of this. The outrage, the indignation, the shock, the horror, the, oh my God, breathlessness, the hysteria you hear there. The president set it up beautifully, because what the president was saying was, well, if somebody came to me, I'd listen to them, and if need be, I'd go to the FBI. Yet none of these people, none of the voices you heard, especially Roswell, Rachel Maddow, the number one conspiracy theorist, now moderator of presidential debates, not one has ever expressed the outrage you just heard, the indignation you just heard. By the way, Hillary recently said, China, where are you? How about giving us information on Trump? Putting that aside, that she bought and paid for what even the New York Times is suggesting was from the beginning Russian disinformation. And we know that she literally funneled money to a law firm, which probably is a big campaign finance violation, that hires Fusion GPS, that hires a foreign national. Now, I thought foreign nationals were not supposed to be involved in American politics. And, you know, we do forget this little detail in the Biden-Obama years, and that is even taxpayer dollars being used. Oh, they tried hard to unseat Obama and Biden. Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu, our ally. So she buys Russian disinformation. This all happens in the Biden-Obama years, after she had a rigged investigation, incontrovertible evidence of crimes, violation, Espionage Act, and then, of course, the clearest obstruction case, subpoenaed emails deleted, bleach bit, and devices busted up and SIM cards removed. That's called destroying the evidence of the underlying crime. That's the intent. They're outraged about Trump and obstruction, but there's no underlying crime, four separate investigations. And all Trump said was publicly, this sucks, this is a witch hunt. And I should probably fire these people. Had the power to do it legally, never did. And cooperated fully. Never, ever once did he invoke executive privilege. Hillary then gets the dirty dossier. Then you have minions within the intelligence community leaking it to the likes of the Washington Post and David Korn and Michael Isikoff, and then that gets disseminated to the American people, Russian lies paid for by Hillary for the purpose of influencing the American electorate before an election. It gets used, unverified and unverifiable, after numerous warnings directly to the DOJ and FBI, the upper echelon, these people involved, that it was tainted, that he was untrustworthy, that he had an agenda, political agenda, that it's not verified and Hillary paid for it. But they don't tell the FISA court any of this. They actually vouch for it being verified. That's why, you know, when Andy McCarthy says they never read it, it's a little bit shocking. And it just shows their utter hypocrisy. It was the greatest setup, intended or not, I don't know, by Donald Trump saying, well, I'd listen. He didn't pay for, he didn't hire, he didn't funnel the money. It's listen and maybe tell the FBI if it's serious. And that's the level of outrage you get. Jonathan Gillum, former FBI agent, federal air marshal, author, bestseller, Sheep No More, Danielle McLaughlin, liberal attorney with us. Hello, Danielle. It's great to have you back again. I know you're going to say that first because you're very nice. But now,
hi, Sean. Hey, Jonathan.
What is worse? I see nothing wrong with the president saying I'd listen, and if it's problematic, I'd report it.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a tricky one, right? So
no, I don't think it's tricky at all, to be honest. Not even a little bit.
It is. And let me address this concern between the Steele dossier and these potential offers of help from the Russians. So Mr. Steele was hired by a law firm that was hired by the DNC and Hillary Clinton. Yes, he was foreign, but that is not activity that falls under the law that everybody is up in arms about, which is this assistance from a foreign national in connection with a federal campaign or actually even a state or a local campaign. Now, the WikiLeaks emails was a result of a crime committed by Russian nationals. So it's a very different paradigm when we're talking about the proceeds of a crime as opposed to opposition research done, you know, as a matter of fact, by a foreign national, but not hired directly by the campaign or the DNC. So they're not the same thing. I know there's a sense about hypocrisy, and if one is wrong, then the other is wrong, but they're not the same under the law.
All right, quick break. More with Jonathan Gillum and Danielle McLaughlin. Wait till you hear from Air Force Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro, amazing man. And I've spent a lot of time with him and his family and much more. All right, as we continue with Jonathan Gillum, Danielle McLaughlin, this is what makes a, you know, such an art form, because the media doesn't even know how dumb they are. They don't know that whether, again, Jonathan intended or not, I frankly think it probably was intended. I think the president understands far more deeply how abusively biased, corrupt, and how quickly they want to react and respond to anything that they think they can sink their prejudiced minds into. And I really think this was a work of art in that sense.
Well, they do that. You know, the media immediately responds to stuff that they think they can sink their teeth into and affect the people that follow them, and that's the extreme left. And I think this is probably intentional. I mean, the president does some amazing things, and he knows how this media works so well, because when he makes a statement like that, this is what's so great about him. You can't get any more transparent than he is and than that was, right? That's his 100% transparency. And the problem that they're going to have with that is that's exactly what goes on in Washington, D.C. all the time. People forget that senators go overseas and or just in D.C. and meet with ambassadors from other countries. Do they think that this is all just formal dining like Game of Thrones, where they sit there and don't really say anything? They discuss, they build friendships, and they get information quite often about political opponents. And as far as the stuff that Danielle was talking about with the dossier and the Russians, here's the other thing that the media does in cahoots with these operatives of the deep state, is that many of the people that worked in that law firm that was hired to collect this dossier went on to work with Mueller. That's very problematic. And also, the fact is, when we say Russian nationals did this, we don't really know. There's never been substantial proof as to who motivated those Russian nationalists, or if they were even Russian nationalists at all, because it was footprints that were left behind. They've never pulled in somebody from Russia that said, raised their right hand and said, yes, I did this. So all that stuff is really hearsay. And when we look at what the president did yesterday, was he told the truth. He put it out there transparently, and it's going to crush anybody else because now they can't do that, which they've always done.
You know, it's such a good point. Danielle, how do you react to that?
I guess my question is this. Is it not easy for any politician, say anyone running for president for re-election, after what we've been through, and, you know, we haven't done...
Can we just slow down on one point, though?
Why can't they just say, we're going to reject foreign assistance? Why is it so hard to just say that?
Why is it wrong to listen and ascertain whether or not maybe they have something nefarious that is to hurt the country, and then you can bring in, as the president said, the FBI? I mean, isn't it different though than hiring a foreign national with funneled money for the purpose of building a phony dossier that was spread out to the American people, Russian disinformation, and literally used to spy on the Trump campaign, Trump transition, and Trump presidency? Isn't that far worse? And don't you think all the indignation and outrage of all these people on the left and the media, don't you think it's selective moral outrage and phoniness on their part to act so outraged on this but ignore what was so wrong with what Hillary did on so many levels?
No, and this is why. There has been no finding that what Christopher Steele did was Russian disinformation, right? There's no finding. He was a 20-year veteran. He was an experienced Russia specialist. He went, he tapped his sources.
We just went through an hour of all that Mueller got wrong in his report, and the litany of things he got wrong is shocking. And he's lucky that the attorney general, frankly, graciously bailed him out of his 9.5-minute lie last week.
That wasn't a lie. That was a summary of the report.
It contradicted every single thing that he had said to five different people on multiple occasions. And then the special counsel put out a statement along with the attorney general's, never mind, I didn't really mean anything that I said today.
Right. Well, I know what you're talking about. You're talking about whether or not a president can be indicted was the sort of the fundamental decision-making thing, whether he moved forward with obstruction of justice or not. Okay, well, we can agree to disagree on that. I've read the report. It seems to me that what Mueller did was leave this to Congress, the piece on obstruction. He said very clearly that there is a part of the Constitution that deals with this, and he flipped it to them. You and I don't agree on whether Barr should have stepped in and made a determination about obstruction, but we're never going to agree on that.
All right, got to leave it there. Thank you both, Jonathan Gillum, Danielle McLaughlin, 800-941. Sean, you want to be a part of the program. Our own Linda spent an incredible night last night with this unbelievable, amazing man that I have met on many occasions, Air Force Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. And we'll tell you about his story and about the Warrior Games. It's a sports competition for injured vets that is incredible. That's next, and your call straight ahead.
Incredible thing to know that they have a program like this for service members or retirees that are wounded, ill, or injured. And it just means a lot for me personally, because I'm still in the recovery process. That it gives me a chance to get out there and stay and remain active.
I guess it's just the whole thing about being part of something, being some part of something bigger. You know, a team, a family. And I have been doing this for 9 years. And I'm like, what do I do now?
Adaptive sports, the Warrior Games, the trials. I mean, with my recovery, it saved my life. You know, I was in a bad spot. And I had a guy one day just... Well, they say things happen for a reason. He caught me in the hallway, and he kind of was like, hey, man, if you're scared to play, don't come and play. And ever since then, I've been the trials, the games, and just being competitive again has saved my life.
I was pretty frustrated when I first had to get retired because I didn't want to. I didn't want to leave Iraq. When I was injured, I was fully conscious. I was awake when they had to amputate me, and I couldn't have any pain medicine because I had lost so much blood. And I remember yelling at my come to Commander, and he's telling me you need to go home. And I still have my trigger finger, Sergeant, or sir, and I didn't want to leave my guys. I felt like I failed the mission, and I felt like I was abandoning them. I'd like to hope I can still help contribute to give something back and serve in a small way, even if it's just letting freshly injured amputees, burn victims, PTSD, whatever level of injuries. I never compare injuries. Pain is pain. And I think it feels good to know that they can see a triple AM and say, hey, maybe I can give this a shot. Maybe, and I see them and I say, oh, I can give that a shot too. And we just pick each other up just as if we were in a line unit.
It is a chance for the American public to understand that the service does not turn its back on its wounded, ill, and injured, which is critical. We all collectively, across all the five services, we all critically look at that we're all in with the service member. From the day you step on those yellow footprints, no matter what service you belong to, that we are partnered with you for the remainder of your life.
The impact it has on the lives of people that have had these life-altering wounds, illnesses, and injuries happen to them, and watching how our program and as well my partner programs, how they have helped these guys get back to life.
All right, this is an incredible program. Glad you are with us. 24 now till the top of the hour. 800-941-SHAWN if you want to be a part of the program. I'm about to introduce somebody to you. He is promoting an amazing group and event, the 2019 Department of Defense Warrior Games. Remember, you know, DT as we affectionately call him. His name is Air Force Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro. He was serving a tour in Afghanistan in 05. His Humvee rolled over, one of these evil IEDs. And by the way, remember early on, we did not have up-armored Humvees, which drove me nuts. And anyway, he won a gold medal at the Invictus Games, which is a sports competition for injured vets, and he also became the first 100% combat disabled Air Force technician that actually re-enlisted. And for his perseverance, his incredible attitude, Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro was presented with the Pat Tillman Award at ESPN's annual ESPY Awards. That was in July of 2017. And the Warrior Games basically established to enhance the recovery, the rehabilitation of wounded, ill, injured servicemen and women, to expose them to adaptive sports, which is doing wonders for them. And, you know, visitors, participants, you know, walk away with an understanding of adaptive sports through, you know, really exciting, entertaining atmosphere and an incredible, human spirit on display. And we're very honored to have Air Force Master Sergeant Israel Del Toro with us.
Oh, and Sean, let me interrupt for one moment because DT is very kindly telling me that I have demoted him. He is Senior Master Sergeant. So my bad.
Well, that's your fault because you were at dinner last night.
And I am taking responsibility.
Well,
Thank you.
Why did you make me? By the way, Sergeant. What is it called?
Senior Master Sergeant.
Senior Master.
I don't even give him that. I just call him DT.
And, well, that's what everyone calls him. How many times have we met now, DT?
Oh, God. I don't know. A couple times, at least.
Too many?
Too many times.
You know what? You went to dinner with Linda last night, and her brain impacted you as she attacks me constantly. I look at this story, and I also want to make sure that we introduce, because you brought friends with you, and again, these are all wonderful people. Travis Clater is with you, and Army Colonel Carrie Harbars with us, and Travis is the director of strategic communications. Did my sister describe accurately to me, and she did it on many occasions because it was a passion, it was a calling for her to help burn victims, and you had a 15% chance of living, and you had 80% of your body with these severe burns. Just to the extent you want to explain how painful that is.
Oh, she was pretty accurate, The one thing a lot of people don't realize about when you're severely burned, they think it's the burns that kill you, but it's not. It's the infection. So they literally skin you alive and to get all the burnt skin off you. And while, you literally have no skin, they keep the room at like 97 degrees and everyone has to be covered from head to toe. And then once you're past that situation, that's where the real hard parts, because usually that happens when, you know, you're out or you're in a coma like I was, so you don't feel that. It's when you wake up and you realize that your skin has to be stretched because everything contracts. But worst of all, it's the hypersensitivity. My hands, you could have rubbed a feather across them and it felt like you were cutting me with razor blades. But every day I had to go through therapy to rub my hands like coffee beans, rugs, just so I can hold something. If not, it was unbearable. I remember one time when the nurses were changing my bandages and it was just extreme pain. I just couldn't take it. And they had to use this medicine called Dilaudid, and so they can literally numb me or drug me so I wouldn't feel the pain because it was just so intense.
My sister described, now it's a long, arduous, hard process to redo the bandages, or she used to say dressings. I don't know which is a proper term. And it changed her life because she'd see the pain in people that was literally unbearable. But if you don't do it, you don't survive. You have no chance of survival.
Yeah, it's true. If you don't go through that pain, your chances of surviving is very minimal. And if you want to have some sort of life afterwards, you have to go through it. If not, it's like you're letting that injury beat you. And, you know, for me, I wasn't going to let that beat me.
Well, I got to tell you, it's an amazing story. But then you take it this step further. And, you know, this 2019 Department of Defense Warrior Games that, you know, you're a part of, the ESPY Award. I was so glad when I had heard about that in July of 2017. But, you know, what do people see at these games? Because I've met people like yourself that have dealt with the pain of burnings and literally arms and legs blown off, blinded, disfigurement. And then these guys not only recover, but then they find a purpose and a strength and skills that they never thought they had or would ever have again in their life.
Well, the great thing about, you know, the Warrior Games is you get to see the true spirit of the human being, of it overcoming the odds and finding that sparkle in their eyes again. Because sometimes when you do get hurt or injured or, you know, whatever, and it doesn't just pertain to service members, anyone that's really going through a tough time that might have been an accident or something, you think you can't do things anymore. And you start getting introduced to adaptive sports. And it gives you hope that's like, I can still do things. I can still play sports. It may not be exactly how I used to, but it'll be different. But at least I'm out there doing it and getting out there into the community, talking, showing them that I'm not going to let this beat me. And that's the great thing about the Warrior Games. You get to see that. You get to see guys that are blind and missing three out of the four limbs trying to swim. You know, guys running, you know, on prosthetics was missing one or two legs. And people throwing implements or even archery using their mouths to shoot a bow. So you get to see all that stuff, and it's very inspiring. Because people always ask me, you know, DT, what inspires you? Because, you know, I do go try and speak and try and inspire and motivate people. But when I see guys like that, or even, you know, at Paralympic style events where I see little kids doing it, man, if that doesn't motivate you, I don't know what will. And it's just amazing. And it's a great feeling to take your family out there and show them and give them a perspective. It's like, look, you're complaining about you got to do homework. Look at what these guys are doing.
You know, I've had this experience, and I talked to Linda. You guys, by the way, she's a trip, isn't she? How many times did she drop an F-bomb last night at dinner?
I can't really remember because it was so
it's
constant.
In the hundreds, right?
It was unbelievable. I was like,
there's like a constant barrage of F-bombs, and she hides it when some people come in, but then,
she didn't hide it with me. Not at all.
If she's drinking, forget it. It's like, watch, and there's a lot of kicking and punching involved. She gets very violent.
And I felt very sorry for you. I was like, oh my gosh, Sean
exactly,
has to work with this,
right?
With this
exactly.
Lady? I was like, and I use lady with a very loose term.
Oh, wow.
You know what? I'm going to disown you both. That's it. Wow. It's over. I'm going to Colonel Harbaugh. I'm not talking to either one of you. Colonel, it's your turn.
No, but yeah. By the way, I just want you to know, if I said that, forget it. You know, there'd be 10 high heels on my throat for 40 weeks. The only thing I want to say is I've experienced this, and when I meet people like yourself, and I met people with the injuries you described, and I've seen many, many times, I almost kind of get embarrassed. See if you can understand this, in the sense that everyone thinks we have problems. And I look at all that you've gone through, and I'm like, okay, why am I such a whiny little, you know, pathetic creature?
I ask myself that every day about you.
Yeah, I know. Good. But, you know what I mean, Sergeant? Senior Master Sergeant.
You can call me DT. Come on, John. DT. How long have we known each other?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, or maybe Mr. Harbord, you want to answer that. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely, Sean. I mean, when you were around these guys, I've been running the Wounded Warrior Program for Special Operations Command for a little over 5 years, been through 6 Warrior Games plus all 4 Invictus Games. And I'll tell you one thing you don't, every day you get up and, you know, especially at my age, I'm 60, you know, get your bumps and bruises in life. The last thing you want to do is be complaining around these guys. You are reminded that
it's kind of embarrassing, isn't it, though?
It is. And it's also inspirational because it motivates you. We want to get as many folks around them. You know, when it comes to the public interest, we want to get, other service members that have been in or around and serving these guys because they're our friends and buddies. We're used to that. We understand and appreciate what they've gone through. And we certainly have borne our, you know, bumps and bruises in military service. But it's one of those things where you just look at yourself, look in the mirror and go, okay, what do I got to complain about today? You know, DT's dealing with, he lost a function of his hands. He's got his body burned the way it was, you know, the disfigurement that was involved that he was worried would scare his son. And ultimately his son was very accepting and recognized that he had his dad and was more happy to have his dad than in at least what pieces were brought back to him that grew and flourished into what DT is today, which is a tremendous individual.
Well, Army Colonel Kerry Harbaugh, thank you. Travis Clater, thank you. DT, you're just the best. I want to remind everybody, these 2019 Warrior Games, they're free. They're open to the public. Everybody's invited to attend and support and honor these incredible wounded warriors that compete on levels that will inspire you and change your life. And it's in Tampa Bay this year, June 21st through 30th. And DT, love having you on. You're the best. And I want to thank all of you because you, Travis, you as well. And because you guys are really, you're giving meaning and purpose and a spirit of competitiveness that we all learn from and inspires all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. And by the way, I would add, we've got 5 partner nations coming out there who have served on the battlefields of the earth with us. So we've got UK, Australia, Canada, the Netherlands and Denmark joining us this year. So 100 international athletes are going to be out at this event.
All right.
And just tremendous. We'll have 300 athletes for the folks
I'm putting it all on Hannity.com. Love you all. I'll be watching. Thanks for being with us. We really appreciate
it. Thank
you, sir. All right. Hannity tonight. We got a great show. The great one, Mark Levin. The brilliant Victor Davis Hanson. Dan Bongino. Sebastian Gorka. Scaramucci. We got Solomon, Gates, Carter, and Tom Fitton. All happening 9 Eastern on Fox News, the news you won't get anywhere else on your television dial. In other words, real news, not fake news. See you tonight at 9, back here tomorrow. Thanks for being with us.